Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the AfriCast. We are coming at you from Johannesburg, live. Not live, because this is pre-recorded. But load shedding is currently in effect. As much as things change, they stay the same. And joining me with power for now is Clinton Matos.
Hello, everybody.
And Robin Lichetti.
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, good. Hopefully the power holds out while we record this this edition of the AfriCast. Thanks, Eskom, who lost 3,000 megawatts of generating capacity today and thrust us unceremoniously into Stage 2 load shedding at 12 o'clock on Friday. Stage 2 runs until 10 this afternoon. But if you're listening to this, I suppose that you still have power and you clearly want to catch up with what's happened this week. Robin, you have some news about a new camera from Canon.
A pair of them, actually. So Canon held the Reimagine virtual event, as a lot of companies have been doing of late. And I guess the two kind of headlining products were a pair of mirrorless cameras, now part of the EOS R range from Canon. For anyone unfamiliar with that range, that's kind of their answer to the high-end mirrorless cameras Fujifilm in terms of their X series. So these are essentially a direct competitor in that regard. They're also, although Canon haven't built them as such, in my mind, they're almost seen as kind of DSLR killers. So these are mirrorless cameras that have a smaller form factor, but still have a performance that's comparable to a DSLR. And potentially for those kind of photographers that are looking to maybe make a switch or kind of add to their range, these are a potential option. So the cameras themselves, it's the R5 and the R6. The R5 is the more flagship of the two. And you getting with the R5, it's also being billed as Canon's second most expensive camera to date. Unfortunately, we don't have local pricing availability just yet. The body alone is going to set you back $3,900 in the States. So I don't know if you need to sell plasma or something or what you need to do to get this. But yeah. The big talking point here is the fact that it's got a new 45 megapixel sensor, 8K raw video at 29.97 frames per second. Unfortunately, it's only going to be able to do so for 20 minutes. So you want to have to swap out a few batteries if you're going to be a lot of 8K raw footage recording. So the R5, it's not really sporting the same kind of specifications. It is still pretty expensive, though. In the US, it's going to be retailing for $2,499 for the body alone. So it's not going to come cheap either. But this isn't sporting as big a megapixel sensor as the R5. It's got a 20.1 megapixel sensor, which is similar to the one found on the 1DX Mark III from Canon. So it's not going to be able to output the same 8K capabilities, but you can do 4K at 60 frames per second. So it's certainly not ill-equipped in that regard.
It's not a slouch. It's weird. Not. It's weird that they would put that smaller sensor in the R6 compared to the R5. That's just me, though, talking out loud, thinking out loud, like thinking R6 sounds better than R5. Why not put the bigger sensor in the higher number?
I think when the news came out, I think a lot of people perhaps not confused, but rather think that the higher the number, the better the quality of the camera, but this doesn't seem to be the case here. So if you are looking for a premium, high-end, professional mirrorless camera, you're going to want to keep an eye out for the R5. We still don't know yet, unfortunately, when it's going to come to South Africa and how much, but it'll probably cost a lot.
As most Canon cameras do. Clinton, you have some news regarding UNISA, or rather, they have some news that you reported on.
Yes, so UNISA, for the first semester of 2020, they moved to online exams. Now, a lot of people are still confused about this. UNISA, while it is a distance education university, it has always done its exams in person. To write your exams, to get your degree from UNISA, you actually need to go to a venue and you need to sit down to write physical exams on physical paper, but they couldn't do this semester, so they moved it online. And now that they've finished, they've done a survey with almost 5,000 students, basically asking them, you know, what was that like? And the big number that stuck out to me was the question, of the second semester of 2020. And they basically said to them, at the end of the year, you know, regardless of what's happening with the pandemic, if you're given the choice to write online again or to go back to how it was, what would you prefer? And 66.1% said we would prefer to do it online again. And 33.9% said I would prefer to do a physical exam again. Now, a lot of people might be saying, you know, it's because the online exam is less stress. And they actually asked about that. They said, you know, which of these statements reflects your experience? And only 33.6% said it was more stressful than writing an actual physical exam. It's almost an even split, you know, 33-something-something for each. The other two options were I found it less stressful, which was 30.5%. And the other one was 35.9% where people found it was less stressful. Sorry, it's on the same level as physical exams. So it seems that things went okay. I think a lot of the stress or trepidation from the exams came from the fact that this was kind of uncharted territory, right? People didn't know, is it going to be more difficult? Is it going to be easier? And something a lot of people were dreading was the system crashing, because UNISA's websites have a, what's a good word to use that won't get me in trouble, a reputation for not being reliable at all. So people were very worried, especially the first few exams had to be rescheduled because the site just crashed. People couldn't download the exams, they couldn't write the exams, and they couldn't submit the exams. So things have gone over kind of smoothly. It seems students had an okay time with it. It seems the university had an okay time with it. We're kind of now waiting for the proof to come out for UNISA to release exam results about it. But for now, I'll link to this story about all the results, and you can see the results of the poll, that is. You can see some nice charts that UNISA put out.
I wanted to ask that. Do you think, obviously, the exams this time around went online because of COVID-19 and national lockdown, and it'll probably be the same for the end of the year. But I was wondering, do you think it could be the method going forward for like 2021 and future ones, future exam slots?
I mean, it could be. Anything's possible. You see, the problem is this, right? What's it called? Formal education has, I don't know what you'd call it, a sick relationship with examination. They love formal testing. They just love it for some reason. In a lot of educators' minds, you didn't pass something if you don't sit down to write an exam, right? Even if the exam is just memorizing 1,000 names and dates and whatever, they just want you to learn that for some reason. If you forget it 20 seconds after leaving the exam hall, that really doesn't matter to them for some stupid reason. So could it be an option going forward? Yes. I mean, if the university looks at this and they look at their books and they say, hey, doing it this way, this was cheaper than renting out exam halls, renting out invigilators to make sure people don't cheat, et cetera, maybe they'll do it. But I think that informal education is just too dogmatic to switch to this. The only reason they've switched to it is out of necessity because of the pandemic.
For sure. I was just wondering that.
We can hold fingers.
And then I have some news from Gartner this week. The research firm Gartner has said that PC shipments for the second quarter of 2019 actually grew. They increased by
2020, surely?
Sorry?
2020.
What did I say?
2019.
Wow.
I think like a lot of us, you're hoping it was last year.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping it was last year again. Anyway, in 2020, during quarter two, PC shipments totaled 64.8 million around the world, and that's an increase of 2.8%. A lot of the growth came from Europe, Middle East, and Africa, where shipments grew by 20%, which is massive compared to other parts of the world. And a reason for this growth, or a strong reason for this growth, is the pandemic and lockdown. Gartner said, what did they say here? After the PC supply chain was severely disrupted in early 2020 due to the COVID-19 pandemic, some of the growth this quarter was due to distributors and retail channels restocking their supplies back to near normal levels. Additionally, mobile PC growth was particularly strong, driven by several factors, including business continuity for remote working, online education, and consumers' entertainment needs. However, Gartner says this uptick in mobile PC demand will not continue beyond 2020, as shipments were mainly boosted by short-term business needs due to the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. So there's growth, but it doesn't look like it's going to hang around for long. Just taking a quick look at the brands on a per-brand basis, Lenovo and HP dominate the top of the market with 16 million shipments each during the second quarter of 2020. Lenovo has the lion's share of the market share there, 25%, while HP enjoys 24.9%. But I do want to just state quickly that in terms of growth, HP is actually doing better. They grew by 17.1% compared to the second quarter in 2019 and the second quarter of 2020, while Lenovo only grew 4.2%. Dell, what's going on, Dell? Because they fell 0.3%, which is gargantuan. Well, I mean, gargantuan in terms of these figures is pretty huge. And then Apple currently shipped during quarter two, 4.3 million, increase of 5.1%. We have a link to the full story at the bottom. But yeah, very interesting to see how the pandemic actually increased PC shipments, despite the world being on lockdown and many countries not allowing anything into their borders from other countries. Though I suppose maybe PCs aren't the same as people. But yeah, so that's the news wrap-up. And this kind of, the news from Gartner kind of segues into what we're going to be talking about for the remainder of the podcast today. And that is, we are sick and tired of working from home.
Are we?
Well, it's more to do with general work from home fatigue. So we, many South Africans have been working from home since late March, including ourselves. While we were flitting about to events and to our offices when we still had offices, we've now been working from home in earnest for the majority of for the entire lockdown, not the majority, the entire lockdown. I haven't really left to go and work somewhere else, though I severely wish that we had. So right at the start of this whole COVID-19 thing in March, we had a discussion about working from home and how we're adapting to it. So I think it's time to do a bit of a check-in with the team. Let's start with you, Robin. How is working from home for you? Are you sick of it yet? Are you sick and tired of being asked to attend yet another Zoom conference call?
Yeah, very sick and tired of working from home. I never thought I'd see the day where I'd long for an office.
Yeah.
I'd long for the commute in traffic. It's been really weird. I think, like you alluded to there, it seems like a lot of, because I'm at home a lot more, that my time is viewed as, I guess, I wouldn't say less valuable. It's not seen in the same way by companies and the companies we deal with on a daily basis that the way that I do. So it seems like we're getting a lot more invites to virtual events. To understand that is time consuming. You have to commit time to actually attend the event, even though it is virtual. And if you are spending time to attend an event, you have to report on it. And sometimes these virtual events, although they're quite easy to log into and kind of view and stuff like that, sometimes what's actually mentioned there isn't of value.
Yeah.
So it really becomes a case of lost, and you never get back. And that really impacts productivity. I don't know how you guys feel.
Yeah, Clinton, how are you feeling regarding lockdown? Are you sick of or working from home? Are you sick of it yet?
Not really. And the reason for that is I was doing this for a long time before we were legally mandated to. So just to peek behind the curtain, for 3 years, I was working only from home, and I was only going into the office 1 day a week, 2 days a week, you know, very minimal amount. So now that I've been forced to do it, not much has changed. You know, I've just been trucking on. Yeah, like Robin says, it is irritating where you get invited to these things, these webinars, and you ask them, can you just tell me what's going on? They're like, well, we'll never tell. You have to watch the video. That's irritating. But really, aside from that, it hasn't been a massive change. I know we're specifically talking about work, but the biggest change has been outside of work where, you know, you finish work, you can't go to the gym, you can't go meet your friends and everything. That's been a big change. But in terms of work, it's been the same for me. And you, Brendan?
Yeah, I've been in the same boat as you, but I think now I'm tired of working from home. I think one of my biggest things that I miss is being able to just interact with other people. I mean, I know I say this, and then we've got all these digital channels through which we're able to talk, like using Discord right now to record this podcast, or using Slack to communicate throughout the day, or just picking up a phone. But it's something you miss when you don't have that face-to-face interaction with people. And like Robin, I tend to agree with the amount of Zoom calls. I have reached Zoom fatigue. If I get another email asking me to join Teams or Zoom for an exclusive event online, I think I'm just going to swear at the person. That's a joke. I'm not really going to swear at people. But I think what Robin says, I just want to kind of amplify that point, is that just because you can have a Zoom call doesn't mean that you have to have a Zoom call. There's been two instances since lockdown began where I've been invited to an event online, a Zoom press conference type thing, and it was for news that was announced many months ago. And I was just like, why are you doing this? You sent this to me many months ago. I wasn't interested then, not interested now. Nothing's changed. And yeah, it's just starting to get a bit much, I think. Like, would you like to hop onto a Zoom call? No, I wouldn't. Can I email you questions and then you just do that? Because a lot of the time, that it's as easy as that. A Zoom call could have been an email. This meeting could have been an email joke that people have been saying for years. Applies to Zoom as well. But yeah, I'm kind of sick of it. And I think what brought this on is we've seen a lot of reports regarding lockdown and work from home fatigue. I think one of the more pertinent ones, and it's something that you brought up, Robin, with regards to working. Kaspersky did a survey a couple of months ago, and they published those in May. Nearly a third of workers, 31% globally, said they are spending more of their time working than they did before. And that's a pretty substantial figure. While Kaspersky, I don't think they told us how many people they surveyed. No, they didn't. But I think that is a sizable portion. A third of people are working more time than they did before. And I just want to gauge from you guys. I know, like, for instance, when we're on Slack, somebody will say, "Oh, that's me for the day. I'm calling it a day." Do you guys actually call it a day when the day is over? Robin, you?
I call it a day in terms of interacting with you guys and writing stories, but I will probably do a lot of admin after hours.
Yeah.
Things like organizing our newsletter and checking in with companies for interviews or information that I'm needing. So I guess technically speaking, the workday hasn't ended,
yeah.
But my publishing and writing of stories has definitely ended. And I say I'm done for the day.
Yeah. Clinton, yourself?
Yeah, it's mostly the same as Robin. The difference between us, I just think, is that I was in university. I hope I've finished now. I just wrote my last exams. When I was in university, when I said I was done for the day, I was done for the day because as soon as I took off the work hat, I had to put on the university hat. So I kind of had to make a clear
distinction.
Because otherwise it would just be 100%, 100% of the time, if you know what I mean. So yeah, I did actually log off, but what happens is sometimes you get emails from people who are in a different time zone and you feel that you really need to answer it because it would be the courteous thing to do. Or it would just be, you know, it's just better if you can get a head start on tomorrow's stuff today.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people have that mentality. And even though I did try and focus more on the university stuff, I did do exactly what Robin's saying, doing some pre-work, as it were. But now that I've finished my last exams again, hopefully, I don't know if I passed yet, I have found myself, you know, saying I'm done for the day, but then I just do other stuff in the background, some work stuff. So I definitely understand that figure of people saying they're doing more work. And I think it's two things. One is that people are just not used to it. So they kind of feel like, oh, this isn't real work. So I need to work some more. And another thing where employers are feeling like it's not work. And they're like, you know, you can log off at 5 p.m., but did you really do 9 hours of work today? You know, I'm speaking to a lot of people who are still working, you know, regular office 9 to 5s. And then they've had to have this massive shift. And I've been talking to them about, you know, how are the employers dealing with it? And they're saying not well, because they feel that they've lost control. So they kind of, they're wanting people to work more, even if the person on the other end doesn't want to.
So, yeah, you guys have pretty much covered all those points that I wanted to make. I don't even know what I'm going to say here.
So maybe I can butt in, Brendan, because I also read that Kapersky study. You sent it to us. I can't take the credit. Because after they say that the 31% of people said they spend more time working, I don't understand the next stat they give us.
Yeah.
46% said they've increased the amount of time they spend on personal activity.
Yeah, so how I interpret that is, for instance, like when you're at home working from home, you can pop off to the side, perhaps do your washing or, I don't know, head to the shops or do something else while you're not at the office, because seemingly your boss is not watching you all the time. So I interpret it as that. It could mean something like they're watching more Netflix while they work and all that sort of stuff. But it is a bit confusing. They increase the amount of time they spend on personal activity.
And also, because what's the last like percentage of people doing? Do they mean that if they're doing more personal stuff, they're not working more? It wasn't worded great, but I think that's a good point to get on to next, is that what are people doing when they're not working? Do they now have more time to do things they'd rather be doing, like hobbies and spending time with family and not friends, unless you live with them for some reason?
Well, like, I mean, I don't find that I have time to do much during the day. And so, for instance, just to give you an idea of how my day starts, wake up 5 or 6, depending on the day and how cold it is, get up, make some coffee, have some breakfast, and then I'll start going through what news I missed over the day or while I slept. And then the day starts, and then a whole bunch of stuff happens throughout that work day, and come 5 o'clock, like you guys, I call it a day, say goodbye to everybody, but then I'm checking in the back, see what's happening, checking emails, responding to emails, doing some testing for review gear, all that sort of stuff. So, I mean, it's kind of like 5 o'clock is when I leave Slack, but then I can continue working for much longer after that. But yeah, I simply don't have time to do this sort of stuff, you know, like aside from maybe like hanging the washing, because it's something that I can do in like 5 minutes. It's not really, I don't really take the opportunity to like, oh, I can walk around the yard for a little bit or do that sort of stuff. But I think it's also an artifact of working from home for so long is you don't feel like you need to go and do this stuff. I mean, I also think that it helps that management at Hypertext is very understanding. Like if, for instance, I need to go and sort out a bill or something, I can take my lunch break to do that. Just tell the team, hey guys, I'm taking my lunch break to do this, and then then able to go. And so I think that there's a bit more leeway from our side, from management, is that there's not this need to kind of skive work and do personal stuff on the side, you know? Where I think that maybe some folks, they do have to do that. Because their employees are like, you must be online 8 hours a day, and if you are offline for 5 minutes, I'm taking that 5 minutes from your paycheck.
Yeah, 100%. Again, it's just the culture of the workplace you're in, right? If they've had to make this massive shift, they might not be doing it I don't want to say correctly. I don't want to say we're doing things correctly and they're doing things incorrectly. They just might be applying the old logic of working in an office to this new setting of working online, where people feel that they, I can't get up from my chair, you know, to check someone ringing the doorbell because this is work time. I can't go answer the doorbell because it's work time. I definitely understand where you're coming from. It all really depends on where you work and what the employer's outlook on all of this is. Robin, you didn't get a chance to answer that. So how do you feel in terms of personal stuff? Because, again, to peek behind the curtain, Robin actually was working from our office in Rosebank. So how has it been for you, Robin, in terms of doing personal stuff?
Yes, I'm kind of on the would make up the 54% people that say that they haven't been able to do more things. Pray for the fact that I think in the office setup, only good thing about having, I guess, your lunch hours or having that kind of elements kind of regulated, that it gives you time to decompress.
Yeah.
I guess when you're working from home, take your lunch hour, but you're essentially still in the same area.
Same space.
You'll make your lunch and then you're just eating desk. You're eating your lunch at your desk and you're doing things. So I don't necessarily think there's been that break. With regards to actually doing stuff, know that especially when it comes to doing your weekly shopping, ideally you don't want to do it at peak times because of COVID-19 and potentially health risks and stuff like that. But also, up until very recently, the store, a lot of retailers closed at 5 o'clock or at 4:45. So it was very much a case of at 4:30, if I knew I had to go and shop, although I had no food for the week, it was very much a case of me rushing and saying, okay, guys, I'm done. I'll see you guys tomorrow, blah, blah, blah. Okay. And I had to rush essentially to the shops to try, make sure I got there in time to do the things I need to do. So, again, I'm not too sure if I've been more productive here. I think there's a lot of dead time as well. But yeah, it's been a mix for me. I think potentially early on lockdown, I was a bit more productive. Nowadays, I'm not too sure. I probably shouldn't say that if my employers are listening.
No, they find. They find, hopefully.
Do you know what I think it is? I don't think it's a matter of doing more or less work. I think it's a matter of misattribution? I don't know. Basically, what I'm saying is, like Robin said, you know, when you're working in an office, you need to drive there every day. You need to do a lot of, like, minutia, like attend building meetings so they can tell you what to do if there's a fire, stuff like that. I think when you're sitting in your car or when you're sitting in that boring meeting about building codes or whatever, I think your mind is saying, this is work, right?
Yeah.
This is what the boss pays me for because I'm physically in the building or in the office doing this. This is work. But it's not really, right? It's just busy. It's a waste of time, basically. So when you're working from home and you're not spending, you know, an hour driving, you're not spending 10 minutes, I don't know, in a building meeting, you're not reading the thing from WeWork, you get a message from them saying, oh, on Friday we're going to have crepes or whatever, right? Whatever it is. So when you're now working from home and you don't need to do that stuff, you're not wasting less time, but less of your time is being taken up by that. And your mind is saying, hey, we're working less, if you guys understand what I'm saying. But what's really happening is less of your time is being wasted. So I think that's a problem in people's mentalities, where they feel like they're doing less work when in actuality they may be doing the exact amount or they may be doing more, but less of their time is wasted. So they get to the end of the day and it's like 3 o'clock and all their work's done. But if they were in an office, it would be 6 o'clock and the same amount of work would have been done regardless.
So I think you raise an interesting point there, Clinton, with regards to the traditional 9-to-5. Because you're working from home, those hours don't necessarily need to be like that anymore. And it'll probably be interesting to see whether employers are going to be don't want to say brave because I'm not brave, but innovative enough to kind of say, you know what, you don't actually need to work a 9-to-5. You don't have to work those set amount of hours. It should be, I guess, output or productivity-based than time-based. I think if you can do X, Y, and Z within a set amount of time, and then you have the rest of the day to yourself, it should be an option for employees. I know it's a bit different for us, journalists, because of the way the news cycles work and stuff like that. Yeah. But for a lot of other industries that are really kind of output-focused, it should be, I think that's something that employers should be starting to think about, especially with working from home being, I guess, hate to use the term, the new normal now.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you there, Robin. I think I think outcome-based employment is definitely going to become something that more employees look at rather than output, outcome, whichever one you want to go for, is going to be more than just, hey, spend 8 hours in your desk and you'll get a paycheck. Because I think a lot of the time what employers don't realize is that while I'm at the office for 8 hours a day, I'm not working all of those 8 hours, spending 10 minutes making coffee. If you're a smoker, you're spending 20 minutes having a cigarette, and you're having 5 minutes talking to Bob in accounting. Then it's Tracy in management is telling you what about this team and that team. I mean, this is just your day is pretty much taken up by doing menial tasks that have nothing to do with your actual job. Just Tracy trying Zilla. To look busy. Sorry, Tracy Zilla. No. Yeah. Different person. Different Tracy. But I think that a lot of the time, a lot of your work, the 8 hours that you spend at the office are spent doing other things. And Clinton, I really like what you say about the point where you're sitting in a meeting or building meeting and your brain tells you that this is work, because I find that happening to myself as well, where it's like, okay, it's 8 o'clock. Time to get working, sit down, start working, and, you know, then I sit down and do what I need to do. But I do find that here around like 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, my mind starts to wander and my brain's like, oh, you're not working though. You're not in an office. And I have to physically like tell myself, no, keep focused, stay on it. But at 5 o'clock, then everything just disappears down a black hole. But it is a valid point, and I think that I do wonder if more people are starting to think like that, in the sense of, okay, well, you're not busy working anymore, but you've done what you needed to do, you've done what you've been set out to do, so what do you do now? And that's when people go to www.youtube.com and then spend 3 hours doing that stuff. But I do wonder if employers will start to look at outcomes based or output based rather than just sit in your desk for 8 hours a day and look busy. Because a lot of the time, folks are just looking busy. I'm kind of stealing this here, but I do want to just give some insights. I work with two other people, live with two other people, and they too do two wildly different jobs. One of them is in marketing, and the other is in the legal sector. And the person in marketing, I will say that they have been going flat out since lockdown began. There's not a moment where the person, like where I've walked in to make coffee and the person is doing nothing. They are literally busy from sun up to sundown. And the same thing goes for the person in the legal sector. However, that's a completely different type of busy, because that person is constantly on the phone, constantly in meetings. I mean, just yesterday I had a conversation with them and they were saying, yeah, well, I mean, by the time it was 2 o'clock, they had billed 4 hours of work, but had done no work because they'd just been in meetings for like a couple of hours. And it was just...
Sounds like a dream, dude.
But it was just so... It was really weird to me to kind of see these three different lines of work and how our days are being filled by different things. I mean, there are times where like we're not writing content on the site, but I mean, to assume that I'm sitting here watching YouTube, like, sure, I do watch YouTube, but at the same time, I'm also looking for stories, chasing up leads, chasing other stories, following up on stories. Like, there's a whole bunch of stuff that you're doing in the interim, and then you kind of sit here and go, oh, damn, it's 2 o'clock, and I need to do some more work. My question to you guys, and this is one that will reveal a lot, do you still take a lunch break? Robin.
Sorry, I'll go first.
Sorry,
yes, I take a lunch break. But
every day, Clinton. Every day.
Yeah, I eat every day. What a glutton.
No. Do you take a lunch break? Like, do you log onto the channel and say, I'm taking lunch every single day?
No, not every day. I try and take it most days because what I usually do is, this is kind of unique to me, but I get headaches. I have chronic headaches.
Mm.
So sometimes I need to take my lunch break literally to go lie down, to take some painkillers and lie down. And some people have said, oh, it must be nice. I've done this even when I worked in an office. I took my lunch break and I went downstairs to the parking lot and lie down in my car. So I do try and do that. And also, like Robin said, sometimes I need to go do some grocery shopping.
Mm-hmm.
So I take my lunch break and I go do busy work, basically.
Yeah. You know,
life busy work, not work busy work. But in terms of the specific of your question, no, I don't do it every day. Sometimes I get too busy and I just don't have the chance. Sometimes, I don't know, you know, one of the people we work with, like, will have a press release that has a video. So I'll put on the video and I'll eat my lunch sandwich during that. And basically I've worked through lunch, but I've still, you know, put food in my body. So yeah, I don't take it every day, but I try and take it most days because it's important to have a break. And I also try to, when I have a break, actually leave my computer to go do something else, even if it's just taking out my phone. So yeah, I do try and take it every day. Robin, sorry, I cut you off at the beginning there. What did you want to say?
I was just that probably do take a lunch hour on most days of the week. But like Clinton said, most of that time actually isn't spent decompressing or taking lunch or actually eating. Maybe 5 minutes of that hour is in front of my PC. And then kind of doing other things, other admin stuff. Yeah, it's not a lunch as a, like I would do, say, at the office where like I'd actually leave the office, go down to the food lovers market, buy something to eat, meet a mate, chat a bit, and then head back to the office later. So I guess that those kind of rituals are gone now.
Yeah. So for me, I think I can count on one hand the amount of time I've had lunch to actually have lunch. Since the lockdown began, because like you guys say, I mean, your time is so limited and lockdown restrictions also made it so that you had to do stuff during the day between a certain time in order to get things done. So yeah, lunch breaks kind of fell to the wayside for me. I mean, to say that I take one every day, like I do try because it is important to take that break, because I have found where days where I haven't taken a lunch break, at around 4 o'clock, 3:30, 4 o'clock, I start to just feel drained, like completely dead on my feet. And like Clint says, I mean, some of the times when you take this lunch break of yours, it's literally like walking 5 steps outside to sit on my chair to eat my sandwich. And then the entire time I'm eating that sandwich, I'm sitting there going, what am I missing? 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 What's happening? What's happening? What's happening? And then I take my phone out. And then I spend the rest of my hour just thinking about work. But yeah, so the reason I asked that question is because I think that a lot of the time, employees maybe don't see that. I know that there are a lot of people that have a mandate to, you have to take your lunch break at this time. But I see fewer and fewer people actually doing that. Like, just anecdotally among my friends, taking an actual lunch break, because number one, there's a lot to do for the people that are working, that I've spoken to at least. There is still a lot of stuff to do, and getting through that means maybe sometimes just sacrificing 30 minutes of your lunch break. But it's to kind of showcase how the we're at least changing in terms of how we go through our workday, especially as regards something as simple as a lunch break. I mean, for instance, like our workday starts, or my workday starts at 8 o'clock, but there's an hour before that where I'm working already, looking for stories, seeing what's happened in the world, following up on emails, all that sort of stuff. And I think, like, the point I want to hammer home here is that perhaps it's time to rethink this draconian way of 8 hours a day, 5 days a week in the office working. Maybe we can do something where it's 4 days. Maybe you allow people to work flexi hours. I mean, with us, it is very difficult. In the media space, it is incredibly difficult to say, hey, work when you're able to, because things happen like that. So it's interesting to see, but I do think that it's a conversation that needs to be had at a high level in management at companies. Is it's not just how you work, it's now about how long you work for. And my concern through all of this, however, is that if you start having this conversation, how long is it before employers start going, well, I mean, if you're only going to work 4 days, then I only have to pay you 4 days of work. So in tandem with this conversation about working from home, I think another conversation needs to be had at the same time about remuneration and how folks are paid. I think hourly rates are slowly going to fall away, and hopefully something where it's outcomes-based is encouraged. But that also becomes a very tricky thing because, and if I get a project in, I mean, just for instance, we have advertising campaigns that we run on hypertext, and sometimes those advertising campaigns are delayed by, for whatever reason, through nobody's fault, but just cosmic events, things get delayed. And if our paycheck depends on that happening, on that advertising happening, do we only get paid a month later when the ads are finished running, or how does this work? I think there's a lot of nuance to this problem rather than just saying everybody work from home or everybody work 8 hours a day. It's a bit more nuanced than that. Or do you guys think I'm overthinking this a little bit?
Be with what you're saying. The problem with outcomes-based pay is that, like you said, it doesn't work in certain jobs.
Mm.
And especially the big one is front-facing jobs, customer-facing jobs. If you work in a store, I mean, they can't say, okay, you need to do 100 sales today and then you can go home. Then the hours really need to be, you need to be there on the floor, you know, helping customers, you know, stocking the shelves and whatever. Or even if you're working from home as a customer service rep, you need to be online to answer those emails. And it can't just be, okay, you answer 100 emails and then you go home. So yeah, it's very difficult. And I think a lot of even employees would prefer to keep it to the hour-based system.
Mm-hmm.
Not so they can cheat it, like, they can watch YouTube videos and then, you know, receive money for that. It's just that that's the simplest way to do things. I mean, imagine how complicated would it be if at the end of every workday you have to open an Excel spreadsheet and say, you know, you should pay me because I answered an email to this person. I did a business tweet here.
Justifying your payment or your salary.
That would be so messy. I mean, if you ask freelancers who basically have to do that for a living when they bill a client, they will tell you it's not fun.
Mm-hmm.
But they usually do it on a project basis where they'll write something up, you know, after a few months or something. Not every day. That would be hellish. It's just easier sometimes to use a punch card. Well, a metaphorical punch card where you arrive at one time, you leave at another. But like you said, the 4-day work week is probably where a lot of places are looking to go if the corporate overlords allow it, because we don't know what's going to happen with them.
Robin, your thoughts?
I think a 4-day work week would never happen, especially here in South Africa.
I tend to agree with you on that point. But anyway, carry on.
I know that I also kind of eulogized about employers rethinking about hours and kind of looking more towards and productivity. Perhaps a better model would be something like in Europe and Spain in particular, where that lunch hour is so sacred. It's almost like a law where you have to take it.
Yeah.
Because I'm a big believer in kind of decompressing.
Yeah.
Robin, I don't mean to cut you off, but in certain jobs, unions actually mandate that you have to take your lunch hour. So in some countries and in some jobs, it actually is law that you're not allowed to work 8 or 9 hours continuously. You actually have to leave work at some point.
That, like in South Africa, I know obviously it is mandated that people have X amount of lunchtime and days off of the year and stuff like that.
Mm.
So, but I do wonder if it's implemented as fiercely as it is, say, in other countries. Because, again, I think you kind of run into the same issue of employer saying that, okay, if you want to only work X or only work as hard as you think is possible, I'm gonna be just gonna hire someone that I know is gonna work harder for less money, because we do have a serious job crisis in the country too. Mm. So fortunately, I think a lot of the power lies with the employers, and there is very little incentive for them to change. So yeah, it's a real difficult one.
Yeah. Well, also, I think we're thinking of non-critical jobs, right? If you or I take 2 hours lunch, or we don't show up for work or anything, nothing bad really going to happen, right? I think I'm more thinking of people doing serious stuff, like they're doing constructions, operating heavy machinery, and if you're working a solid 9 hours, you're going to have fatigue, and you might have a deadly accident because of that, or a surgeon or a pilot or something like that. So again, it's just differences between these industries. We have to apply different methodologies.
Yeah, and I think that the point we want to raise here is that these are conversations worth having whichever industry your business is in or that you work in. I think that it is important to start having conversations like this, because as we've heard from government time and time again, this is now the new normal and unprecedented times, and things are going to change. We'll never go back to the same way that things were before. I think I got them all. I think I got all the cliches during lockdown.
Bingo.
So I think it is important that these conversations are had, especially if businesses are looking at changing and changing the way that their culture operates. Whether that will be something that we'll see in our lifetime is something entirely different. I don't doubt that there are business leaders who are very, what's the word?
Forward-thinking.
Yeah, forward-thinking is probably the best way to say it. That are forward-thinking, that are looking at how they can make their employees' lives a little bit easier. I think that's another important point, is that like you giving your employee an extra hour of lunch break so that they can decompress and step away from work and actually just do something else rather than work for 8 hours straight. I think it's an important thing to consider. The human element, at the end of the day, we're all still humans. We are all dealing with the immense stress of a pandemic at this point in time. But I do think that it's important to keep that at top of mind as well, is that while people are working from home, it's not just that they are working from home. They're also dealing with their own mortality, guys. I think that's something that keeps being missed from every single Zoom meeting I have sat in, every single phone call I have had, every single email I have had. It is the one thing that is missing, is the human side of things. I wrote a story about this earlier this week about human capital and how businesses need to...
I hate the term human capital.
Well, how businesses have to value their employees and their workers. And I think that it is becoming more and more important. I understand that employees are screening for COVID-19 and that's a big thing at the moment, but it's not the only thing. The wellness of your employees matters as well, because I'll tell you what, right now, folks, if people are feeling fatigued and they don't want to go to work, you're not going to get the best results out of them. If they feel like they're just sitting in a hole on their own, you're not going to get results out of them. And I know that sounds very jaded of me to think that, oh, well, if you just treat people well, then they'll do better in their jobs. But that is just a fact of life. If people are happy in every aspect of their lives, it's a lot easier to do work. Is there anything else you guys want to add before we wrap up for today?
I'm just glad that, you know, this is a privilege showing that I don't have to go into an office right now. I know a lot of people, especially in America, where even if they're not doing like a retail job, they, like you said, someone's working in marketing, their bosses are like, yeah, we need you. If you don't come in, we're going to fire you. So that's worry. I'm glad we're not in that position. And I know a lot of people are and a lot of people aren't. I'm just speaking for myself.
Robin, anything to add?
I'm very tired now. I think it kind of reiterates what you were mentioning. Yes, working from home is the new normal. But aren't normal circumstances, and we need to start thinking about how the new normal can actually also be better.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that employees really need to start thinking about.
Cool. So I think that's going to wrap it up for us this week. We will not talk about lockdown again for a while, because these types of things do kind of make us a little bit sad inside. But take care of yourselves, folks. Take your lunch breaks. Call it a day at 5 o'clock. Only log on when you're supposed to log on. Just take care of your mental health. I think that's the important thing here. Even if your boss thinks that you're not working enough, be sure to take care of yourself. That's all I'm going to say. Until...
Can't buy your health.
Nope, you cannot. You cannot buy your health back. So, ladies and gentlemen, from myself, Brendan Loss, cheerio, from Clint Matos.
Bye, everybody.
And from Robin Chetty.
Okay.
We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.